sir. You can hold on one moment. The Honorable Miss Leah Rittenhouse will conduct your hearing, sir. So just hold on to the phone.
Okay.
Mr. Carnes?
Yes.
Could you please state your full name and your ABC number for the record?
My name is Jeffrey Wayne Carnes. My DOC number is 125489.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a revocation hearing concerning the 7 allegations that are on your warrant. And you were notified about this hearing on January 17th. You signed a form that day. Do you remember signing that form?
Yes.
Okay. On that form is a list of your hearing rights, and one of your rights is that you could hire at your expense an attorney to represent you. Did you hire an attorney today, sir, or will you represent yourself in this hearing?
I didn't hire an attorney. I don't know if my family might have.
Okay. Most people don't hire an attorney, sir, but it is your right if you wanted one.
Okay,
so I'd like to introduce you to the members of the board. You can't see us. Normally you see us on the video, but we're on telephone hearing today. But we have in the room the Honorable Louis Quinones, the Honorable David Neal, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, our board chair. You heard his voice a minute ago. The Honorable Michael Johnson, and my name is Gail Rittenhouse. I'll conduct your hearing today. We also have in the room with us representing the Department of Corrections and also representing your parole officer, we have the Honorable Mr. Turner from the Department of Corrections. We also have some visitors for you. And what are your names, please?
Trisha Morgan.
Okay, and?
Renee Ellison, his fiance.
And Renee Ellison are present in the room as well, sir.
Okay.
So before we get started, I need to swear. Are you going to speak on this? On the stand? Okay. So, Mr. Carnes, Mr. Turner, Ms. Ellison, is it? And, I'm sorry.
Ms. Morgan.
Morgan. Mrs. Morgan. Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God, and do you so affirm? Mr. Carnes?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
I do.
Ms. Ellison?
I do.
And Ms. Morgan?
I do.
Thank you. Okay. So, Mr. Carnes, your hearing will be conducted in two phases. Phase one, to determine if you violated the terms and conditions of community supervision. And then phase two, to determine if your supervision should be reinstated or revoked. So, Mr. Carnes, for phase one, I'm going to read each of these allegations to you. And as I finish each one, I'll need you to respond whether the allegation is true or false.
Okay,
sir? Just check something here quickly. Okay. So, we'll start phase one, and the first allegation is that you were in violation of condition number two, as demonstrated by your failure to follow the directives of your assigned parole officer by frequenting a known, and this is in quotations, illicit drug house, in quotation, on January 4th, 2019, without prior permission from your assigned parole officer. Mr. Carnes, is that true or false?
No, it's false.
That's false. Okay, we'll go to allegation number two. And the allegation is that you were in violation of condition 14B, as demonstrated by your failure to plug the tracking device into an electrical outlet immediately if the tracking device vibrates and the power LED flashes red on or about January 5th, 2019. Mr. Carnes, is that true or false?
It's true. It took me 36 minutes to plug it in.
That's true. Okay. Allegation number three is a violation of condition number seven, as demonstrated by your use of heroin on or about January 3rd, 2019, per the task GCMS lab report dated January 7th, 2018. I'm going to guess that's January 7th, 2019. I believe that's a typo. Mr. Carnes, is that true or false?
That's false.
That's false. Okay. Allegation number four is that you're in violation of condition 13E as demonstrated by your failure to refrain from accessing or attempting to access, directly or indirectly, any internet websites of any kind whatsoever, including but not limited to social networking websites and chat rooms, in order to, in whole or in part, view or generate content or material that may be, in quotation marks, harmful to minors, end quotes, or otherwise, quote, unquote, obscene, end quote, involving depictions of both minors and adults, as those terms are defined in Arizona Revised Statute 13-3501, on or about January 3rd, 2019. Mr. Carnes, is that true or false?
That's false.
That's false, okay. Allegation number one, two, 4. 5 is that you're in violation of condition 14H, as demonstrated by your failure to refrain from viewing, purchasing, possessing any pornography, sexually stimulating material products, or entering into any adult establishment of any kind on or about January 3rd, 2019. Mr. Carnes, is that true or false?
Well, that's true and false.
Well, I need one or the other, sir.
That's false.
All right. Allegation number 6 is that you're in violation of condition number 7, as demonstrated by providing a urine specimen that was adulterated by dilution and unsuitable for testing on or about December 26, 2018, per the TASC GCMS lab report dated January 7th, 2019. Mr. Carnes, is that true or false?
That is true.
True, okay. And then the 7th and final allegation is violation of condition number 7, as demonstrated by your failure to submit a urine specimen for drug testing on or about for the task, it doesn't give us a date, for the task individual testing compliance summary dated November 20th, 2018 through January 7th, 2019. Mr. Carnes, is that true or false?
That is true.
That is true. Okay. All right, Mr. Carnes, well, since you testified that allegations 1, 3, 4, and 5 are false, I'm going to take testimony from Mr. Turner, and then we can discuss each of those, and you can explain your position on those. But we'll do them one at a time since there are so many, and it might be kind of confusing. So allegation number 2, Mr. Turner.
Allegation number 1?
I'm confused.
Allegation number 1. On 11-20-2018, the offender reported back to Arizona from Nevada, where he was under interstate compact supervision since his release from prison on 4-8-2017. Arizona conditions of supervision, direct/marijuana, special conditions, sex offender conditions, GPS conditions, sex offender registration, notification requirements, tax referral, work experience,
Mr. Carnes?
Hello?
Yes, could you please hold the phone receiver so it's not, we're getting your breathing, and that phone receiver is very sensitive, so we're hearing every breath that you take. So maybe
okay.
Kind of turn it away so you can hear, but and then when you need to talk, turn the receiver down so you can talk.
Okay, I can barely hear you.
This is being recorded, and we need to have a clear recording. Thank you, sir. Thank
okay.
You want me to continue? Or?
Just, maybe the paragraph right before.
Okay. Arizona conditions of supervision, directive, law, order, medical marijuana, special conditions, sex offender conditions, GPS conditions, sex offender registration, notification requirements, statutory, task referral, were explained to and signed by the offender. On 1-3-2019, offender reported as directed to the Phoenix Electronic Monitoring Unit. Offender was staffed with parole supervisor Fleshman and SPO Pareda due to the offender testing positive for opiates on 12-26-2018. Offender initially stated that on 12-24-2018, he took two pills that were prescribed to someone else for back pain. The offender stated he obtained the pills from a guy that resides at 922 West Cocopop Street, Phoenix, Arizona, 85007. The offender also admitted to taking two additional pills from the same person and location on 1-2-2019. The offender was asked what kind of pills they were. The offender stated it was opiate-based. The offender was asked if he submitted a urine test today, what else would he be positive for? The offender stated opiates plus whatever else they used to cut the pills with. Based on the offender's statements, the offender is obtaining non-prescription medication, if not illicit, illegal substances, at the residence located at 922 West Cocopal, Phoenix, Arizona, 85007. Thus, the offender was verbally directed to not frequent this residence anymore. The offender acknowledged the directive. The offender did state another resident owes him money, but stated he would make arrangements with him to meet him elsewhere. On 1-4-2019, at 10:55 a.m., the offender's GPS points showed that he was at the residence 922 West Cocopaw, Phoenix, Arizona, 85007, that he was restricted from going to. GPS points showed the offender was inside the residence until 11:01. The offender did not have prior permission, nor did he seek permission from his assigned parole officer to go to the residence. Follow-up to number one, on 1-5-2019 at 2:27 p.m., from 2:42 p.m., the offender's GPS points again showed the offender was at 922 West Copenhagen Street, Phoenix, Arizona, 95007. The offender did not have prior permission, nor did he seek permission to go to the residence.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. So, Mr. Carnes, what is not true about that allegation?
Okay, well, first of all, it says here that I admitted to taking pills, that I never said that.
Well, so the allegation is that you were at a known drug house, and that would be the specific address of 922 West Copenhagen.
Well, I never went to an illicit drug house. My job has me delivering car parts all over the valley, so it's possible I was there. My GPS would say that I was there if I went there for the delivery of car parts. Other than that, I couldn't tell you. I don't know what that address is. I can tell you I have a GPS number if you can look it up and see if I was actually there.
Well, the allegation, sir, Mr. Turner has testified that the GPS shows that you were there. In fact, the...
Well, I would like to make sure that it actually does show that I was there.
Well, sir, Mr. Turner is sworn in, and he's representing the parole officer in this hearing.
Okay.
He has access to the GPS data.
Okay, he has access to the GPS data?
He does.
Okay, unit number 344-39374.
He does not have that access right now.
Oh, okay, well. Apparently, they're saying I was in a illicit drug house.
Mr. Carnes,
I can't say that I was or wasn't.
We're going to move on to
the river car parts. I mean,
Mr. Carnes, we're going to move on to the third allegation, which is about the use of heroin.
Okay.
And you also indicated that one was false. So I'm going to take some testimony from Mr. Turner about allegation number three. Right where it doesn't need to be. Okay.
What is it? Allegation number what?
This is allegation number three, Mr. Carnes, the one about using heroin.
Okay.
Allegation number three. On 11-20-2018, the offender reported back to Arizona from Nevada where he was under interstate contact supervision since his initial release from prison on 4-8-2017. Arizona conditions of supervision were explained to and signed by the offender. Offender was assigned to task for random drug and alcohol testing. Task to meet procedures and expectations were explained to the offender. On 1-3-2019, the offender was verbally directed by assigned parole officer to submit a urine specimen at task for testing. The offender submitted the urine specimen and was subsequently tested positive for heroin 6 men per the task GCMS lab report dated 1-7-2019. Follow-up to number three. Note that during the staffing with offender on 1-3-2019, the offender was specifically asked by parole supervisor Fleshman, when was the last time he used heroin? The offender empathetically denied the use of heroin.
Okay, so Mr. Carnes, the task lab report is in front of me here. What's not true about this, sir?
Well, apparently, if he had asked me when I used heroin last, I would have told him 8 years ago. I wouldn't have said I deny using it. That's the drug that I would normally use if I was on drugs, but I haven't used that drug in over 8 years. I don't know why the task report says that I have used that drug, but it says in here that I gave him a diluted, and then they say that I'm dirty. So I don't know which they want to go with. One that's not testable or one that is, but it just, none of this even makes the remotest amount of sense to me. Why would I deny the use when they said, if they said to me, go to task, and if you tell us what you're on, we'll give you a pass on this. In other words, admit to us what you're using and we're not going to use this against you. Why would I deny any use of something if they're not going to use it against me? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well,
you know, I would have told them the truth,
this allegation,
which is 8 years ago.
This allegation and the one about the diluted specimen, that was on a different date. That was not this date.
Okay.
So we'll move to allegation number four, and I'll ask Mr. Horner to read some testimony on allegation number four. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Allegation number four. On 11-20-2018, the offender reported back to Arizona from Nevada where he was under interstate compact supervision since his initial release from prison on 4-8-2017. Arizona conditions of supervision to include sex offender conditions were explained to and signed by the offender. The offender was directly, verbally, and in writing not to use any type of social media websites. On 1-3-2019, Fender reported as directed to the Phoenix Electronic Monitoring Unit. Fender was staffed with Parole Supervisor Fleshman and SPO Pareda due to the offender's testing positive for opiates on 12-26-2018. Offender's smartphone was inspected by PO Bird. The offender had been using the social media websites Facebook and Twitter. Fender did not have permission from his assigned parole officer to use any type of social media websites.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. So, Mr. Carnes, what's not true about this allegation?
Oh, the allegation actually was that I was using it for the purposes of, what was it that it said? Something about pornography and the use of social media to, let's see. In order to, or in whole or in part, view or generate content or material that may be harmful to minors or otherwise obscene involving depictions of both minors and adults as those terms are defined. That's not true. I had a Facebook account, not a Twitter account, but I had a Facebook account, and the only thing I used that for was to keep in touch with my friends and access Double Down Casino. But I didn't access those accounts to have obscene
things.
Yes, ma'am.
If you look at this and look at the way it's worded, it's attempting to access any internet websites of any kind whatsoever, including but not limited to. Social media.
Okay.
So in this case, I would think that one is true. Mr. Turner, could you please read us allegation number five?
Yes, ma'am. On 11-20-2018, the offender reported back to Arizona from Nevada where he was under interstate compact supervision since his initial release from prison on 4-8-2017. Arizona conditions of supervision to include sex offender conditions were explained to and signed by the offender. The offender was directed verbally and in writing to not view, purchase, possess any pornography, sexual simulating material products, or enter into any adult establishment of any kind. On 1-3-2019, offender reported as directed to the Phoenix Electronic Monitoring Unit. Offender was staffed with PO's Parole Supervisor Fleshman and SPO Pareda due to the offender testing positive for opiates on 12-26-2018. Offender's smartphone was inspected by PO Bird. An adult pornographic image sexually stimulating material was observed on the offender's phone. The offender stated the photo was of his girlfriend. The offender did not have permission from his assigned parole officer to view or possess any type of pornographic images or sexually stimulating materials.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. So, Mr. Cox, what's not true about that allegation?
Well, I'd have to change my statement on that. That was true. I had a photograph of who I consider to be my wife in my phone, of her in the tub. Her butt is showing, so I guess that could be sexually stimulating.
All right, sir. Okay, well then, Mr. Kleins, I'm going to make a motion to move this hearing from phase one to phase two. So if you'll just hold the line for a moment. I also need to complete some paperwork correctly. I'm going to say, based on Mr. Carnes' admission in allegations 2, 5, 6, and 7, and based on testimony from Mr. Turner, the Department of Corrections, on allegations 1, 3, and 4, I move to find him delinquent as he violated the terms and conditions of his supervision and may have lapsed or had lapsed in the criminal ways or company.
Second. Agreed.
Okay, second by Mr. Johnson. Agreed. Dr. Wright, Mr. Neal, Mr. Quinones. Okay, Mr. Carnes, we'll go to phase two of your hearing and determine if your supervision should be reinstated or revoked, sir. But before we do that, Mr. Turner is going to give us some background information so we have a little more little more to go on. So just hold the line, states, remain right there, and we'll be right back with you just a moment and talk some more. Okay, sir?
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Turner?
Yes, ma'am. Carnes was released from ABC custody on 4/8/2017 and arrested on 1/10/2019 by ABC Portal on theft violation. No new charges are noted. He was returned back to ABC custody on 1/10/2019 with a CSCD of 3/3/2020, 0 abscond days. Current convictions, 2000, commitment E, count 1, trafficking in stolen property, 3 years, 6 months. 2000, commitment F, count 1, armed robbery, 18 years, 6 months. 2000, commitment G, count 1, armed robbery, 18 years, 6 months. 2000, commitment G, count 2, kidnapping, 18 years, 6 months. 2000, commitment G, count 4, armed robbery, 13 years. 2000, commitment G, count 5, armed robbery, 18 years, 6 months. 2000, commitment H, count 1, armed robbery, 18 years, 6 months. 2000, commitment I, count 1, armed robbery, 18 years, 6 months. Prior convictions, 1995, commitment A, count 1, narcotic drug violation, 2 years, 6 months. 1995, commitment B, count 1, burglary, 2nd degree, 3 years, 6 months. 1995, commitment C, count 1, theft, 3 years, 6 months. 1996, commitment D, count 1, theft, 3 years, 3 months. This is his second term in ABC with a CUIR score of 3/3, mental health score of 3, substance abuse score of 2. STG information, he is a suspected member of the STG criminal street gang area in Brotherhood of Arizona. Prior terms of supervision, 1999, TIS release, arrested, found in violation, reinstated, completed 9 months. Disciplinary is significant and lengthy with rioting, weapons, violence, and drugs noted. Other arrests, 1985, marijuana violation, Arizona juvenile probation. 1985, burglary, Arizona juvenile probation. 1986, theft, Arizona juvenile probation. 1994, misdemeanor, other, DUI, Arizona guilty, other sanctions. He has a GB score of G6V8. He is a level 2 sex offender that is registrable and notifiable for 10 years after his release from prison.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Turner. Okay, back to you, Mr. Carnes. We have a brief little summary of what occurred while you're on supervision. Actually, not so brief once I turn over to page 2. It looks like, as Mr. Turner stated, you were released to go to Nevada and you were living in Reno, Offenhauser Drive, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, with your mother, okay, who's here. And the 20th, you came back to Arizona.
Yes.
Okay. And it looks like you elected to go transient at 43rd and Union Hills?
Yes, I elected to stay at 43rd and Union Hills, okay, across the street from the residence that I was supposed to be staying at when I left Reno.
Okay. And why was that, sir?
Pardon me?
Why was that?
Why
were you not staying at the residence?
Oh, I guess the verbal okay to stay there by the management isn't enough. They wanted a signature from that person after telling the person that I was a level 3 sex offender, and they refused to. Well, actually, their corporate office won't allow them to sign any documents at all.
Okay, so it was an apartment, like an apartment complex, or?
Yeah, an apartment complex.
No, an apartment home. Okay, all right. That explains it all. Okay, and were you working still?
Yes, I'm working at Phoenix Rack and Axle and deliver carports.
Okay, oh, that's the carport place. Okay, gotcha. All right. And there's a little bit about task for drug and alcohol. Let's see. three specimens. It looks like on December 24th, you failed to submit. Do you remember why?
Yeah, it was the day before Christmas. I thought they were closed. They say that I called them, but I don't remember calling them. I mean, I have an app on my phone for that. I could have looked at it. I'm not 100% sure, but I check that app every day to see if I have to test. And on the day before Christmas, I'm pretty sure I didn't check. And then on Christmas Day also, I figured they'd be closed.
Okay. Well, that's
so then when I was directed to go, I went.
Okay. All right. And it says you were directed not to consume more than 20 ounces of fluids, but the specimen was diluted and was also positive for morphine.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy too, because I have to drink more than 20 ounces of water. My job, I sweat. You know, I take apart car parts also and rebuild them. And so I'm in a shop with no air conditioning. There's no way I can go and just drink 20 ounces of water and then go test. I'm dehydrated throughout the day if I do that. So I had already drank a lot of water. And
okay, so
when I went and tested, that's probably why I came back diluted. But if it's diluted, how is it testing positive?
One can understand why being diluted might lead someone to suspect that someone was trying to hide something.
Oh, of course. I completely understand that. And they had actually talked to me about that and said that there was going to be, the sanctions were going to be increased testing and also talking to my parole officer more often and doing community-based intervention,
okay.
You know, like drug classes and stuff. None of that happened.
Well, the December 26th specimen, the one that was diluted, sure is being positive for morphine, but there's an additional note that heroin metabolizes and will show as being positive for morphine. Then on January 3rd, you were directed to submit another urine specimen, and you submitted that, but that one was positive for heroin, so.
No, I haven't used heroin in 8 years.
Let me see, I believe I have the report.
I have the reports too. I see where it says that, and I see where it actually says 60,000 plus nanograms per milliliter.
Mm-hmm.
I can't explain this.
Okay.
I know why I violated. I know why I made so many mistakes. I came back to Arizona with the wrong attitude. I came back thinking that since I'm not a sex offender, I won't be treated like one. That someone would, you know, use common sense and apply only what the law requires and not more. I was wrong. I came here with the attitude that these rules don't apply to me because they shouldn't, but I was wrong. They apply to me because the Department of Parole says they do. No matter how unfair it may seem, it all applies to me because you guys say it does. That's what I did wrong. I thought I would be treated differently because of that, because I'm not a sex offender and I've never been arrested for anything even remotely resembling a sex offense. The people at Central Office I spoke to agreed, but they said there's no policies in place for me, that this is what I have to do. The police department says I'm a level zero. The Department of Corrections say I'm a level two. It's back and forth and it's confusing and it upset me a great deal to be called a sex offender when I'm not. And I just need to register for 10 years. And I thought that all of this was going to go pretty simply, but it didn't. I have to tell prospective employers. I have to tell people I might be living with. I have to tell prospective landlords and basically anyone who has the ability to affect my future in a negative way. I focused on how unfair everything was, and I stressed out about it, and I made a lot of poor decisions because of it. I focused on all the wrong things, and now I once again removed myself from my loved ones because of my attitude and my actions. You know, the parole officers have been, you know, the first time that I was tried, they tried to violate me. I was still in Nevada. They said I didn't register when I did. Then I get back here and they're shouting at me that I'm a sex offender and that's the way it is. And I'm losing my freaking cool. And, you know, I made a lot of mistakes. I've been treated unfairly on a lot of levels. And I told myself that that would excuse any transgressions. It does.
Well, is that why you thought the rules didn't apply to you?
The sex offender conditions. I had a Facebook account I'm not supposed to have. I took a picture of my woman in the bathtub. I shouldn't have done that. I mean, they knew I had a smartphone. I mean, that much is obvious. I was calling them from it. But these things that are applied to me, they're applied to me when I'm not a sex offender. I got convicted of kidnapping someone who's under the age of 18. I get it. I understand that there's no policies for me, that they have to do what they think they have to do, and I have to follow those rules. I get that now. I gotta stop focusing on all the negative stuff and focus on what I had going for me. I had a job. I have family who cares for me. I don't need to spend 13 months in prison. It's not going to do me any good. You know, I need to get out there and take care of my own responsibilities, pay my own bills, work and pay for my own way through life. You know, and in order to do that, I have to follow the rules. I thought I didn't have to follow all these rules. I was wrong. I can see why they thought I was trying to deceive them. I can see why they would assume that I'm doing things that I'm not. I can see why they look at this and say, this is what you're doing. I get that. I do. But I don't want to waste another 13 months in prison, and I don't know how to say that these people are bullshitting when how can I say that they're liars and then expect to get reinstated? How can I say that they're making shit up? It took me 22 minutes to travel from 7th Avenue in Buckeye to 43rd Avenue in Union Hills? What was I doing, 110 miles an hour? I mean, how do I call people on bullshit and then expect to get reinstated? I can't expect that.
My family doesn't want me to do things I didn't do. Mr. Carnes, I don't see anything in the allegations about you traveling any distance. What we're talking about is the specifics that I identified before. There's nothing about traveling. There's nothing about any parole officers.
There is. And a lot of the allegations that are true, that aren't true, is like one of them going to this address, this residence. If you follow up for allegation number one, 2:27 p.m. to 2:42 p.m., I was supposedly at this place where I had a monitor on my ankle telling me I was dead, and it took me how many minutes? 22 minutes to plug it in? And that means that I traveled from this address on 9th Street in Cocopah, which is somewhere around Buckeye, and I drove all the way to 43rd Avenue in Union Hills to plug in. 22 minutes or 23 minutes it took me? That's ridiculous. There's no way you can do that. You get stopped for speeding by 7 different officers between the Durango Curve and Greenway before that ever happened.
All right, Mr. Carnes, I'm going to see if other board members have any questions for you. Any questions on your mind? Okay, I'm going to allow your supporters an opportunity to speak, sir, at this time. So I don't know who wants to go first.
Can I finish one statement, please?
You may. You have an opportunity at the end to make any statement you want, but go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
No, you can say something now if you want. No? Okay.
All right. I'm sorry, what was that?
Let me have your supporters speak, and then you'll have an opportunity to speak.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for being patient this morning.
That's okay.
And if you'd just come up to the podium and state your full name, please.
Patricia Morgan.
Thank you. And what would you like to let the board know?
Okay. What I'd like to let you know is, as he said, Jeff was released from prison from Stafford on April 8th of 2017. I picked him up that day and we proceeded immediately to Nevada. We arrived in Reno on Sunday, April 9th, and on Monday we did go to the Nevada Department of Safety, where he met with his parole officer, and then we went to Reno Police Department to try to get him registered as a sex offender, which is required by Arizona. Nevada had a problem with that because they didn't require it. So they told us he was registered. It turned out he was registered as a felon, not as a sex offender. And we did not realize this until we got a call from Arizona a couple weeks later stating that they were going to violate him if he didn't get registered. So another trip to the co-op, another trip to the police department, and then finally got it straightened out. They just didn't want to do it because it wasn't required by them. Within 2 weeks of arriving in Nevada, Jeff had a job doing construction for a native organ at the Tesla plant. He visited his parole officer every time he was scheduled, and he was drug tested each month. And then besides that, he was called in randomly for drug testing. In 19 months, he never failed a UA. When Lorraine Morgan lost her contract, Jeff was out of work about 2 weeks and was hired by Masset Construction to also do construction at Tesla. He had many friends in Nevada, as evidenced by some letters I would like to read for you. Closed in for a few years and have never viewed him as a threat to anyone or society. From what we have observed, Jeff is a hard worker and has always tried his best to keep a steady income and be independent with his newfound freedom. He managed to get a car and keep it up and also acquired a good job after he was out of the daily way of life for so long, which could not have been achieved without his internal drive. We have enjoyed going camping together, going to dinners, getting together for holidays and birthdays. He's always been polite, friendly, and helpful. Jeff, Jeff invited and us remiss for his old ways of living and his women to go on, look forward to his new life he was accomplishing with friends and freedom. We are all disheartened to know where Jeff currently is residing because we believe we want Jeff to be an honest, hardworking person and a good friend who deserves so much more. Another letter. I am writing this letter out of concern for Jeff Carnes, but who I met as a neighbor and neighbor shortly after his release in 2017. At first, I was skeptical of befriending a newly released individual. I was encouraged to give him a chance by our longtime friends and neighbors Ed and Sharon. I have not regretted that decision. It became a friendship that was based on positive aspects of plans for living a good future, and he was very optimistic. We spent most of our time with friends and family members. He even attended my family reunion in the summer of 2018. Camping trips and working alongside me at home, he was eager to make a future friend self involved in doing all the things that a good citizen would want. He would be concerned with abiding the rules he was given, both by the probation officer and his work ethic. Please consider that he has had an impact on me because of my first experience with an individual such as Jeff. It is my hope you will take into account all the good he exhibited during the time we spent together, as I was encouraged to give him a chance based off to extend the same story to him. We have another one that says more of the same. I also have a letter from his foreman at Masthead. I am writing in regards to Jeffrey and his employment here at Masthead. During his tenure, Jeff displayed exemplary attitude, attendance, and work ethic. His abilities and knowledge quickly made him an asset to our company. He displayed great leadership and performed his duties with the utmost proficiency and professionalism. Jeff was regularly given many important tasks, which he completed to the letter with minimal supervision. His intelligence and natural ability to problem solve proved valuable here. I believe Jeff would be a great addition to any company, and I know he will succeed in any endeavor he chooses to pursue. I would recommend him to any employer without reservations, and he have his name and phone number. Okay, in October 2018, we had to change the requirement for registered sex offenders. They would all be a tier 3 and have to stay registered for life. Jeff could not accept this. The fact that he has to register all is unacceptable to both of us. He was convicted of kidnapping in 2000. There was a child under 15 in the store that he robbed. The law requiring convicted kidnappers to register sex offenders was not passed until 2007. This is 6 years after he was convicted. He never had the opportunity to fight this charge and certainly would have if he had known another registration requirement. Up until then, he was classified as a Tier 1 in Nevada, which does not require notification. That's when he decided to return to Arizona. Since I returned here, things have changed. It was these changes, I think, that's made it so difficult for Jeff to accept what DOC was saying that he could or could not do. In the manner he was allowed to live with me, here he is now. There he reported once a month. Here he's reported once a week. DOC requires that a department manager sign a form stating that he is a sex offender and they have to do notifications. Since he is a Tier 0, according to Detective Sampson of the Phoenix Police Department, There are no notifications. The DOC still requires that a form be signed. The manager has given a verbal okay for him to live there, but her verbal shouldn't allow her to sign anything. So he's been there in Eagle Mine and staying across the street from our complex from 9 at night till 5 in the morning. In Nevada, he was tested once a month. Here, it's 2 or 3 times a week. In January alone, he was tested 4 times in 9 days, on the 1st, the 38th, and the 10th. In December, I had a question about the requirement for him to sign, to have a form signed for him to live with us. All we wanted was for him to be able to live with us. And I called DOC Legal Services, and I talked to someone named Kelly. I explained what was going on, and he stated that since Jeff was a tier zero, he shouldn't have to have the form signed. But as Jeff said, there's no DOC procedure or for dealing with a zero tier. There's no DOC procedure. Everything has to be signed. So, and I think, and then Kelly said he would call Officer Berg and his supervisor, Peralta. From that day on, it seemed like when Jeff went to visit on the 3rd of January that things became a lot tougher with his visit with people. They had 5 guys in there, and he said they were all yelling at him. And he became mouthy, I'll admit that, and he gets that honest enough. Okay, he did make a mistake being on social media, when he should have been. And as far as being on the computer, the only thing that I ever saw him doing on that was looking for work. It took him 7 weeks to get a job once he got here. And when Officer Burke suggested he try being Shrek and Axel, they went over, he went over there and was tired. And we were so grateful because we are having, you know, a little financial difficulty without his help. And then we didn't have any prisons like we needed any anymore. On the day that he didn't charge, I don't know how, because he was working 10-hour days. It takes an hour at least to go back and forth to work. That's 12 hours. 8 hours in his car from 9 to 5 is 20 hours. That left 4 hours to take a shower, eat, do, you know, do normal things. It's been very difficult for all of us since we moved here. The DPS in Nevada treated us so differently, and this is what's been so hard for them to accept. I think he realizes now that this is what he has to live with for the next 13 months, and will certainly do his best to obey all the rules. I would ask him that you release him to his family, but I'm not so sure that he should have the same parole officer. I don't think they can be impartial after this. And I feel that he's really suspected them and wind up right back over here within a couple of months. You know, everything I've told you is 100% truth to the best of my knowledge. I would beg you to please give him another chance. We need him, and we love him very much. Thank you.
Any questions from the board members?
Sorry.
Can you stay compact? Yes?
Well, we got it.
Can you shed any light on the transfer? Is that what you mean to
yes.
Nevada?
Yeah.
Is that routinely done, transferring supervision to another state?
If someone requests to go to the other state and there is a compelling reason, there has to be a compelling mm-hmm. reason why they're there and they have the support, it can be approved. So there's a fee that they pay, then it goes through our interstate compact to Nevada's interstate compact, mm-hmm. and they do their investigations. It's an interstate compact, so it's the same rules throughout the United States. If all that is met and that other state accepts them, then they can transfer.
So the reason is I just didn't quite understand. I thought they had to, before they could apply, they had to be out. So apparently this occurred before.
No, they can actually apply while they're incarcerated.
Okay.
It took me 5 months to get that transfer approved.
Okay.
5 months.
Sorry. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and then Miss is it Elsa?
Please forgive me, Miss.
Oh, that's it. Don't worry. Try to relax. And just state your name.
Renee Ellison.
Okay, and what would you like to tell the board?
I first like to speak to the fact that Jeff's sobriety is important to him. That was the first thing when I met him, he and I discussed, and the fact that there is nothing he would ever do to go back to drugs. I can attest that on January 2017, helping a friend move, he was bitten by a black widow spider, which abscessed and caused him to be hospitalized. He allowed them to lance that all the way down to the bone with no anesthetic whatsoever because he did not want to jeopardize his own. His sobriety was first and foremost to him. He passed 4 kidney stones within the last 17 months with no drugs, no intervention whatsoever. So for them to sit here and tell me, pardon me, that he was in a drug house, or that he was taking drugs, or taking heroin, is so unfathomable to me. I can't believe it. I'm sorry, I cannot believe it, especially when he has prescriptions for a non-narcotic pain medication at home. Why would he go to a house for drugs? I can't fathom it. He gets home, he's allowed to come home from 5 a.m. to get ready for work till 6 a.m. He gets on the road and leaves for work. He works until 5:30 p.m., drives home, which is an hour drive. He gets in the house at 6:30. He showers, we have dinner. He might have an hour and a half to charge before he has to hop in his car and sleep across the street. Those are not conditions that are perfect. How can you expect someone to succeed given those kind of circumstances? I ask you, it's not you. He's not a bad person. He is not the person that they're saying that has done this. He's not. I guarantee you he will not jeopardize his sobriety. I know this for that because I've told him the one thing that will cause me to leave him is him returning to drugs. I know that I am one of the most important things in his life right now.
Yep.
Thank you, baby.
I didn't know you could hear me. Take a deep breath.
So you need to address the board, and then you need to address the board.
I'm sorry. I can tell you that my daughter has stated to me that she is going to use this case as her law case history and research. She is currently a law student and has been accepted to ASU for criminal law. And she is going to use this case, his case, for her research for college. She is behind Jeff 100%, as is my family, all my friends. I've only known him to be the most utmost, honest, straightforward person. The first thing he said to me is, I am a convicted felon, and I need to advise you of that before I enter your house. And I said, Mr. Carnes, step into my house and let's have a talk. And we became fast friends ever since. A bond that can't be broken. I just ask you to look at the facts why in 17 months there have been no reason for violation. And within 7 weeks, seriously? I'm at loss for words. If it weren't for the fact that the company that I worked for transferred me here a year ago, this would not be the state or location or city I would have lived in. Irony, bad luck, this is where it landed me. And he followed. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Ellison? Okay, thank you very much.
I just have one question.
Yes.
So you're basically stating that you believe that these allegations are false about the drugs tested.
I'm sorry, I do, emphatically. As a matter of fact, when he said that the one desk was diluted, I encouraged his mother and him to get in the car with me to go to an independent lab and have a test. I asked for an attorney so that I could go into the jail at Alhambra and do a hair analysis, because I believe to my core that that is false allegations. I'm sorry, I do.
Okay, that's, you really express some of your feelings. You have that right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Mr. Carnes, you need to address the board.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Mr. Carnes, we're coming up toward the end of your hearing, and I want to give you the opportunity, as I mentioned before, to make a final statement. We just ask that you not repeat something you've already said in recognition. We still have a full docket for today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, that's not a problem. I know it's not likely, but I'm going to ask that you guys reinstate me just so I can go out there and take care of my own responsibilities and you know, instead of wasting over a year in prison. I succeeded on parole for, I mean, the better part of, you know, 2 years, almost 2 years. I did successfully complete 13 months because I've changed my attitude and I received the parole department's message loud and clear. I'll do whatever is required, no matter how unfair I feel it is, because I love my family and I love my fiance and I value my freedom. If I'm reinstated, I'll be a model parolee like I was in Nevada. And you won't hear anything about me until March 3rd of 2020 when I'm discharged from parole. You know, more frequent tests, drug counseling, whatever it is that you guys want me to do, I'll do it. It doesn't matter if I think I need it or not. It just matters that I follow the rules. That's all I have to say.
Okay, Mr. Carnes, thank you. Mr. Johnson has
to ask. I just wanted to just ask you just one question, because you just heard some of the testimony. I would probably test some of the information that we just received. However, are you also alleging that these allegations are untrue?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Are you also alleging that these allegations in this warrant are not true?
Yes.
So each of these allegations are basically you stating are untrue?
The ones that I said aren't true, except for the pornography one, that was kind of unclear about that. I haven't used drugs in over 8 years. I don't know why they insist on me saying I took pills when I didn't ever say that. And you don't cut pills with anything anyways. And if I had done drugs and they said go test and they tell us what you're on, we'll work with you, we'll get you counseling and all that. Well, if they had done that and I was on drugs, wouldn't it make sense to tell them, you know, hey, yeah, this is what I'm doing, I need help? I mean, I've been doing this for more than 20 years, I'm not stupid.
Okay.
I'm not going to throw my freedom away by pissing them off and telling them, no, I didn't do it, if it wasn't true.
Okay,
I'll give up hair. You can test what I did the last 7 years, and then the only thing you're going to find in my system is what the doctors prescribed.
Okay, what about the going to the address, the 922 West Cocopa?
I have no idea. It's probably someplace I delivered car parts to. I've delivered to several residences since I started working at Phoenix Rack and Axle. Most of the places I go to, granted, are car, like, repair shops and stuff, but there are some residences that I've delivered to, and I'm thinking that it looks like 9th Street or 9th Avenue. I don't know which, but I know that it's over in a bad neighborhood, and I can understand why they'd be saying don't go there. But if I'm driving there to deliver car parts, it's kind of hard, you know, not to stop and deliver the car parts. Judging by the times that I was there, for 6 minutes or 16 minutes, I mean, that's about right for getting a signature, and it's about right for waiting for a paycheck, you know, to give them a check and to take it back to work.
All right, thank you, sir.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Carnes, the board is going to go into discussion. We do all our discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law. So we just ask that you stay on the phone, just remain silent, and that applies to people in the room as well. And,
okay.
And we'll be back with you in just a moment.
Okay.
All right, the board is going to discussion. I just have to say, as one board member, I'm not appreciative of Mr. Carnes' attitude and his pushback at everything that is presented. I think that we have a certain amount of evidence, including report, test reports at a lab that I've personally visited, so I trust the reports. I also look at a very lengthy criminal history with violent crimes. I look at continuing discipline in prison that involves weapons, violence, drugs, rioting, I believe. On the positive side, I acknowledge that he did a prior community supervision term, was arrested, was reinstated, and did 9 months. So that's on the positive side. So he's proven that he can be in the community and abide by the rules. As far as whether the laws in Arizona and Nevada are compatible with respect to sex offender, that is irrelevant to this board. This board has no authority whatsoever to make any of those kind of judgments or comparisons, and it really is irrelevant.
I would
certainly listen to any input from fellow board members and certainly appreciate discussion. Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you. And I'm sure I'm just saying the variation of what you just summarized, but I think it's rare that task is wrong. It's possible. I wouldn't say it's impossible. And we hear thousands of cases of all variations where state parole officers serve with compassion and professionalism. And considering the whole of Mr. Cohen's case, I have a hard time believing that the state conspired against him to violate his community supervision. There's just too many factors. I appreciate his position, and I've heard wonderful testimony from his support and very appropriate testimony, thank you. But I am not finding him a suitable candidate for returning to community supervision.
Could you?
Yes, I agree. I just can't believe that he would be over in that area 922 West Copepa, delivering parts. That is an area known for heavy drugs, and also an area where if you were delivering some parts that you probably wouldn't want to go inside somebody's residence to get something out of there. But I've seen many of these reports come through here, and we've often talked about the monitor and how accurate it is or what it actually does. I just, you know, can't see that the state or the parole officer would conspire against Mr. Carnes to just make up these things, and the test that came back would come back positive. So I don't see him being conducive.
Thank you. Mr. Jay, any further thoughts?
I'll just say that, Madam Chair, is that as it relates to the task, I believe that's task, and the task is not a part of DOC. They're separate. They're totally separate. They have nothing to do with each other, and I don't believe that task would put its reputation on the line, because task is recognized. I've been the task as well, just to it, and I don't think they would really, because they're recognized throughout the United States as one of the best in the United States, and I just can't accept the fact that they would jeopardize their history and their respect to deal anything legally or online with DOC or any other entity. That's all I want to say.
Okay, thank you. And
just one quick follow-up, and again, this is out of respect to everyone. What Mr. Carnes is stating is not impossible. I'm just saying it's not probable.
Yes. Thank you, sir. All right, I'm going to make a motion that based on information of warrant 2019W0065, a conversation with Mr. Carnes, information provided by the Department of Corrections, I move to revoke community supervision as Mr. Carnes was delinquent, violated the terms and conditions of supervision, and had lab stores about to lapse into criminal racer company, specifically by performing the activities and behaviors that are outlined in this warrant.
Second.
Agreed.
Agreed?
Agreed.
Motion by myself, seconded Mr. Johnson. Agreed, Dr. Rose, Mr. Neal, and Mr. Quinones. Okay, Mr. Carnes, the board has voted unanimously to revoke your community supervision, sir. And what this means is that you'll be released on or about March 3rd of 2020, and at that point, you won't have community supervision of any sort. You won't have to worry about a parole officer, and you'll be free. You'll still have your level 2 sex offender registration within Arizona. But beyond that, we certainly wish you the best. Thank you for participating. Thank you, supporters, for participating in the hearing today.
And somebody will notify the Phoenix Police Department that I've been reincarcerated?
Would imagine they probably already know, or they will. If you have some pending activities with them, then...
Is he...
Well, that's for the registration thing. I don't want to be in violation of that, because then they'll make me a lifetime register.
I believe DPS has already been notified.
Okay. And Mr. Turner believes DPS has already notified, sir.
Okay.
All right, thank you, sir, and this will conclude your hearing.
Have a good day.
Thank you.